That they also exposit that there was a satellite that went around Venus that returned with a mysteriously high level of radiation. The science is bad. They shoot it out, they shoot it in orbit.
Right, because they're terrified of Venusian radiation. And I'm like, f***ing second wave feminism.
Johnny fought that man. He fought him. And I'm like, oh, lady.
And I ran and I ran and I ran.
Oh, God. Ben sees her spiraling, right?
Yeah.
He turns to her and he's all like, I think you need to just calm down.
Yeah.
Right?
And she just ramps up even harder. It's like, Johnny's still out there and we have to go get him.
The look on Ben's face is like, okay, here's the thing. I like what he says with his mouth, but I like what he says with his eyes better, because he says, I think you just need to calm down. But his eyes go, you need to quit your shit.
Yeah.
She goes, Johnny's out there. He goes, your brother is dead.
Yeah.
And she stands up and she like, he's working on a door and he's told her to calm down twice. And she's like, no, you're not hearing me. We need to go get him. And she whips him around and he's like, your brother is dead.
Mm-hmm.
It's like she gets violent. She's yelling at him. And then she slaps him in the face.
And he slaps her back. And I'm like,
he takes a
whole.
Thank
you.
He like registers it. He registers it. And then he's just like, no. And he smacks her really hard. And it's okay. Here's the thing. I'm usually against violence against women in general. I like to think of it as like a.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. She committed violence first.
Mm-hmm.
She was obviously losing her freaking mind.
Right.
It was a different era. But like, I don't know anybody who doesn't want to cheer that moment.
Right. Well, and. Like, for me, I am an equal opportunity slapper.
Well, it's if it's open-handed.
Yeah. So long as it's not to children. Because, I mean, children generally can't reason with them. But if someone, like, is like you said, she instigated the violence.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I kind of, and also, she's not being helpful at all. If she were trying to be productive in this moment, and then she just doesn't register that her brother is dead, and when he does say that, she just kind of digs her heels into it, but she's been productive up until this point, then I would be a little bit more like, okay, she shouldn't have slapped him, and he shouldn't have slapped her.
But
I can't fault him on it because of the privilege that she has over him.
She instigated the violence.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say that again and again. But also she was about to put them physically in danger.
Right.
She was pulling him away and trying to actively undo the barricade he was putting on the door.
Right. And if he had just been like, open the door and tell her, you want your brother, you can go ahead and leave, which is what I would have done in that situation. But she was, but like the first time.
You'd have been like, die.
I would have been like, you want to go outside? Fine. But as soon as I board up this door, I'm not unboarding it for you or your brother. That's
Ooh.
What I would have said.
You would have harried them?
I would have been like, this is your decision in a moment of stress and it's not going to work. That's what I said after the first time watching it. The second time I realized she was saying we, because she was like, she probably knew on some level that she couldn't go ahead and actually take care of this herself.
She hasn't taken care of anything this whole time except for eating all the candy.
And so when she's wanting to go out there and she's saying, we need to go and get Johnny, I would have been like, no, you can go get Johnny. But as soon as, and that is your choice. That is your choice in a moment of stress. But I am not going to open this door up for you if you come back and regret that decision.
Okay.
That's what I would have said.
I would have supported you on that. Mm-hmm.
I don't think the slap is retaliatory.
I think that he's just trying to shock her out of it?
I think it's quite possible he was either trying to bring her out of her state or trying to subdue her so her state wouldn't possibly attract more zombies
being
from
left.
Outside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or if Ben had an Ambien that he could have given her, I think he would have given her an Ambien.
Here, take this pill. Take this pill.
Right. But I mean,
I want to see him put it in her mouth and like stroke her neck like in
Phantom of,
like in Phantom of the Paradise. Get these pills in you. Get back on stage. Sleep.
Well, and I mean, you did mention that this was a previous time where like women were seen as like hysteria and women was just a normal feature because
hysterical is a sexist word. Okay, but here's the thing. I agree with all of us.
Mm-hmm.
I think we can all equally agree with each other on this one. I think it is most strongly shown in that she passes right out. He slaps her.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he did slap her on, oh, it's a boxing term. There's a space on your jaw. It's a glass jaw where, like, mm-hmm. you can get jarred really good. Like, there's a temple spot that you can hit. Somebody will go down like a sack of potatoes. Mm-hmm. But I think there's also, like, the crystal jaw or glass jaw. Correct us on our socials. But he slaps her hard enough that it could have made her pass out. But I think more so she was extremely up there and was probably close to having that moment anyway. You know what I mean?
Agreed.
She was inches away from shock, and that just sent her into shock.
Yeah, yeah. So she passes out. Ben finds a radio.
Yep, turns it on.
Now it's time for exposition station number two. Woo, woo.
I would like it noted, which is just kind of a, it may be just a sense of realism to it. But when Ben turns on the radio, he has to wait a little bit before he can switch through the radio stations because the tube in the radio
has to warm up. Oh, I will also, a note of realism. When she was expositing about her time in the cemetery, she does start to come out of it a little bit, and she's like, oh, it's so hot in here, right? Because mm-hmm. she still has her trench coat on.
Oh yeah,
and all of her different layers of polyester clothing from the 60s. She passes out. He lays her on the couch, and then you see him undo her coat because she was hot.
Yeah,
so like, he took care of the situation and he continued to provide care even though she wasn't present.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was very thoughtful and respectful.
Ben is the only one equipped mentally to deal with this situation.
He's the only one who could deal with Barbara alone for a few hours.
Right.
I wouldn't.
Because they're yelling pretty loud. And I want to point that out because there's a moment later on.
Mm-hmm.
They were being really loud. And then, like, he goes on to board up the house to the best of his ability.
So you get a lot. I realized that this movie, watching it with subtitles, is a lot better for me. Because if I'm watching something visual, I focus on it. And without the dialogue being at the bottom of the screen, I didn't pick up nearly as much. Mm-hmm. So these past few times I've watched it, I'm like, oh, perfect sense.
Right.
Because I don't pick up, like, I unfortunately think of, like, radios and TVs, especially within a media, as background noise. So I'll often ignore it. Mm-hmm. So somebody would be like, did you see that thing in the background of the thing? And I'm like, no. No, because I was staring at the main character and focusing on what they were doing.
Right.
But he specifically goes back and recalls information from the media that he consumes throughout the film and references it. So, like, getting to actually read it as he's doing these silent tasks was, it was really eye-opening because they're like, there's mass murders and people are, like, walking around murdering each other. And you see the outside world idea of what's going on evolve through the entire film. They change it up, like, three times.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it serves not just as exposition. It would have been just good exposition, but it's also the continued opening of this world for the audience as well as the characters.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like, to be frank, it's kind of like the beginning of the COVID epidemic, right? Like, there's this bad thing that's happening in China. And then that was, like, off in the peripheral. Oh, there was the first case in Washington State. And I was like, oh, maybe I should pay attention. Mm-hmm. Oh, the people in the Midwest are freaking out now. I should listen to a podcast. Oh, I should probably check the CDC because my job is laying people off. Oh, I've been laid off. Maybe I should carry hand sanitizer with me everywhere I go. Like, starts off as, like, this vague thing off in your peripheral. So, like, you're just on a drive with your family and the radio cuts out, you mm-hmm. know? Like, but now you're in a place and they're like, murders are happening and people tried to murder me.
Yeah.
You know?
And the government's telling you to take shelter in any place that you can.
Board up your windows is what this specific broadcast is saying.
This is a really good choice, Naomi.
What?
Really good choice for a movie.
It's really, I mean, like, it fits so many different places for me.
I did a movie about an insane artist who was like, oh no, my precious art has been taken away from me. I'm going to hurt people now.
It was.
So, I mean, just saying.
I got a lot out of that too, though. I feel like
Being kind. Thank you.
No, I'm not being kind. I'm being selfish. I love the ridiculousness of the movies, some of the movies you've picked. When's the last time I thought about Faust? Not since, like, I don't know if I've ever thought about Faust outside of, like, other people referencing it. So, like, I love Phantom of the Opera. So, like, that whole thing. Dun, 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 dun. Hex yeah. As iconic to me as, they're coming to get you, Barbara. Oh, yeah. So, I'm not mad about it. Oh, this is the part where, okay, jumping back in.
Yeah.
Are we jumping back in?
Yeah.
Got all 6 feet in there?
Sure.
Okay. He looks out the back door. The different porch. So, like, he burnt the body on the front porch. He looks out the back door. He sees that there's a crowd of them approaching, probably 10-ish. The number fluctuates, right? he finds another thing of lighter, maybe the same thing of lighter fluid. He takes one of the table legs. It's huge. It's probably 3 feet long, and it looks like it weighs like 15, 20 pounds. He wraps a sheet around it, makes his own torch, shoves the chair out the front door after spraying it with stuff. He lights it on fire, and then he manages to get it all the way off the porch.
Yes.
Because he learns. Ben evolves.
Yes. And then he goes back to working on boarding up the house.
He shuts the door, but what do we see behind the door that he shuts?
Mysterious door, possibly.
Is it Chekhov's door? Will that door come into play within the next act?
I love how you keep bringing up Chekhov's random things.
Yeah, because they're awesome.
Yeah.
Well, ever since you made the reference, now I like want to say it every episode. Like, okay. Oh, what is that? Foreshadowing? Is there an inconspicuous door? Yes. Yes, there is. Okay, so Ben throws himself down in a chair, pulls out a smoke. He sits there for a second, kind of listening to the radio. This is like the first moment you see him take for himself, like maybe the only moment you see him take for himself. And he only gets like one drag of cigarette before he's like, oh, there's a closet there I should look in. And he stands up like immediately. He goes over, he opens the door, he's looking around, and he looks down and he sees a pair of shoes.
Who possibly could need a pair of shoes?
Why, Barbara! Barbara needs a pair of shoes!
Because she ran without her shoes.
She's been shoeless the whole time.
Shoeless Barbara.
She's a vagabond of shoes, that Barbara.
Clueless Barbara, more like it.
Barbara the vapid. So he like, okay, but this is the genius of him. Like he gets the shoe. He goes to bend down to get the shoes. He looks to the left and there's a shotgun there that he would not have seen had he not been the kind, thoughtful, empathetic, ever evolving, non-stubborn, strong male lead that I need in my life.
Ben is just a great character. And if he is this great of a character because of Dwayne Jones.
Only because of Dwayne Jones.
Seriously.
Yes. Okay.
Was that in the script? Because you have the script, right?
Yeah, I have the script. I don't know if it's in there.
Why don't you keep talking? I'll let you know.
Okay, so he finds shotgun bullets. He goes.
He goes and he puts the shoes on Barbara.
He gets like, down seriously. On his knee to do it. He's like, look, I brought you shoes. And you were like, no. And I'm like, it's not about her, Lydia. It's about Dwayne.
I'm just saying, just give her a task and be like, here, you need to put on the shoes because you need to do something.
They were slip-ons. They were probably her level of competency.
Just in a normal day to day.
I can't possibly put my feet in those shoes. Oh my God. Gets her freaking shoes, also a gun. Oh, so now we're at Stages of Barb Part 2.
Yay.
Passed out. hold on a second. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We're at stage 7. Stage 7 is passed out, which is the best Barb stage. So he's talking to her, putting the shoes on her. And this time watching with you is the first time I ever noticed a bruise on her jaw.
Yeah.
Sorry. Didn't look for signs of abuse, but this is her mute, bruised, silent stage. That's number 8.
I have the answer for you on if Ben helps Barbara get her feet into those shoes. And Ben holds one of the shoes near her foot, it says in the script, waiting for her to lift her leg and slip into the shoe. She is still. Finally, the man takes one of her ankles and fumbles to put the shoe on her foot.
Well, so, Dwayne did it gracefully. He didn't fumble at all.
Yeah. Ben says he's going to go ahead and check upstairs.
I'm going to stay right here. The doors and windows are blocked. You're going to be, it's not all the way secure yet, but you're going to be safe right now while I go look upstairs.
Right. And he goes upstairs. He handles the body that's up there. And he's pulling the body away. You had mentioned that as he's pulling the body away from the camera, he kind of like lifts up part of the rug so you can't see the face.
It was saved on makeup.
Well, yeah, but like earlier, the face of the dead body is actually shown to Barbara when she comes up to the stairs.
Oh,
yeah.
Pretty gnarly, right?
There's
blood everywhere.
It looks kind of like it's a decayed corpse, at least to me.
There's no face on the face when we see it from Barbara's perspective, but we do get like a corner of the face when Ben is dragging the body and there's face on that face.
Yeah.
Weird.
So Barbara's sitting down and you kind of see like the mysterious door, Chekhov's door, kind of open up a little bit.
Yeah.
And a couple of men come out and Barbara screams.
As you would.
Yeah.
Freaking A.
And then Ben comes down.
Although she didn't scream when Ben showed up.
No.
She did scream when these guys showed up.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Points to Romero for that one.
Mm-hmm. And so Ben comes down as Barbara like falls back into the couch and everything. And these two men who show up are apparently Mr. Cooper and second guy.
I wrote it down as Tim, but it's not.
Okay, so Naomi asked me, like, what was this guy's name? And I make a reference to Monty Python, you know, there are some who call me Tim. And turns out his name is Tom.
Yeah, but my notes are half Tim, half Tom.
Yeah.
So guys,
mine are all Tim.
You just strap in for it, because we're going to give it to you like we do.
Yeah.
Okay, so I have them labeled as Harry, the second worst person in this film. And Tim, the idiot.
He's a boy.
He really is. He's just like, he's poured into a t-shirt. He's not bad looking, but like, he's also not my flavor. It's pretty obvious who's my flavor in this film, but that's fine.
Yeah, but they see the radio, they're happy to see the radio, and then as they're like working with everything, and Ben's like, you guys didn't hear us screaming and working up here?
We didn't know if it was you or one of those things. Harry's a fast talker, mm-hmm. and he justifies himself continuously. He is a grade A douchebag right out the gate, and it's very obvious.
Yeah, he justifies every bad intention that he has.
Well, it's all selfish. He's focused on himself, and when he's not focused on himself, he's pretending to be focused on his family.
Right.
But it's transparent, because he only cares about himself, and you see him make that face over and over again, where you're like, oh, he's lensing of self over and over again.
Right. And Ben calls them out, and Harry talks about how the cellar is the safer place for them to be, and Ben's just like, no, that's a death trap. And Tim Tom, he goes ahead and he's waffling between the two sides. Like, maybe you both have a good point. And I kind of think that both of them do.
Well, that's the problem, is that they both make sense. It's just, as a zombie fan, as a zombie genre fan, like, I know that overall, mm-hmm. in this specific scenario, over the studying I've done, they say if you've done something for more than 10,000 hours, you're an expert in it. I am your resident zombie expert. Objectively, Ben is correct. However, they're in new territory. What Harry's saying makes a lot of sense. But you see Tim Tom going back and forth, because he's got these two authoritative men who are both older than him, who either one of them could be his boss or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so Harry makes a good point about how the zombies, they're slow. Ben is like, you know, they're not very strong. I took out a bunch of them. I took out three all by myself. And then Harry's like, yeah, but it's not going to be just three of them. There's going to be 5, 10, 20 of them. They're going to conquer by quantity. And that's what I love about Romero zombies, is because I think they're the most realistic in terms of how they would overtake. It's not going to be the rage zombies from God Bless It 28 Days Later, which are really what got me into the zombie genre. But the slow dawning horror of like the continual massive building of these flesh-eating ghouls, Harry's got that. Mm-hmm. It's the only thing I appreciate about Harry.
Yeah.
Oh, but we also they like one of the zombies grabs Ben through the window.
Right.
And Tim Tom grabs what apparently is a knife and not a steak from the top of the fridge and stabs at it and cuts up this wax hand that looks really whack.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's like chop, 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 chop. And they like, it's a pretty gratuitous shot and it looks very, very fake. And I like it.
And, you know, I did think it was interesting that Harry didn't point out and be like, see, I told you it wasn't very safe up here, you know, that sort of thing. And he didn't. So I don't know.
Oh, but we get a shot of the zombies outside. And guess what? That's our first naked zombie.
Oh, yeah. There's just like this horde of zombies.
Naked. Oh, you were asking about why there would be a naked zombie. Would you like me to tell you now?
Yes.
OK. So it's the recently deceased.
Mm-hmm.
They specifically say that it's not people crawling up from out of the grave. So everyone you see is dressed in their funeral attire. But if you're at the morgue.
Oh, okay.
You might be undressed for, mm-hmm. for,
Because you're on the, because
you
you're.
Might, you might be getting treated before you get buried, or you might be in an autopsy. We don't see your front. So mm-hmm. not in the version we watched. You do get boobies in some versions, but the free versions we got were like boobless.
Yeah.
But it's pretty interesting because you see people in all manners of dress, mm-hmm. and it's interesting to think about. But most of them are people in suits.
Mm-hmm.
And that just screams funeral home to me.
There was one guy in like his PJs.
Yeah, or a gown from a hospital.
Right.
So it's just an interesting detail, and I think that was thoughtfully put in.
Have you ever seen that meme? It's from Jurassic Park, and Sam Neill is saying, they travel in herds. They do travel in herds, and then it's a picture of zombies. That's what that's reminding me of.
They do travel in herds.
Yeah.
This is also the same. So naked zombie, and then bug-eating zombie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay. So they...
I could rant this whole movie. I'm so sorry, Lydia.
No, go for it.
So Harry's adamant that he's going to go back into the basement because he's got his wife, daughter, and Tim Tom's girlfriend down there, Judy. Mm. And he's like, well, I'm going to take some food and I'm going to take this girl. And Ben's like, no, you're not. Because what I'm fighting for is everything up here. That includes the girl. So you're not going to lay a hand on her. That includes the food. And you can just go down there. He also
mentions the radio, which I thought was interesting that he was like, that includes the radio, the food, and the girl. And it was like the radio is a means of communication and gives them information.
Uh-huh.
Food as, you know, these are things that we need in order to sustain ourselves.
Uh-huh.
And then it's...
The autonomy of a girl getting to decide where she's going to be and she needs protecting and he views him as a predator.
Mm-hmm.
But he's like, this is the part where he goes, you go be the boss down there. I'm the boss up here. And Harry's like, this man's insane. This man's insane.
Yeah. But Ben is not, because as the audience, we have seen that he is not insane. And I thought that was a really powerful statement that a black man in 1968 had made the mention of, you can be the boss down there. I'm going to be the boss up here.
Yes.
Boss man. I mean, like this.
Well, Harry does look like the beleaguered, comb over, middle mm-hmm. management, sniveling, jerky type.
Right.
I mean, he does a really good job. It's hard not to hate him mm-hmm. in real life. You're like, oh, yeah. He's probably a really nice guy.
The actor, yeah.
Yeah, but he's like a total snoobs, which is a word I just made up.
Great.
Snooty,
great word.
Snooty boobs. Nope, you can take that right out. He's just...
Snooty boots?
He's just the worst.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is when Judy comes upstairs, mm-hmm. and this is where we both realize that it's Tom and not Tim. I just wrote that down. Yeah. But also, Helen and Karen are part of us now.
Right, and Helen is Harry's wife. Mm-hmm. Karen is their daughter. Karen is just laying on this makeshift table, and mm-hmm. she's got like a blanket over her, and Harry's like, how's she doing? And Helen's just like, oh, it's probably just shock, but she's very warm.
Okay, so it's the three of them downstairs. The family unit is downstairs.
Right.
And Harry's like smoking over her body. And this is when Jen was like, Harry is Nixon. Would you like to elaborate at all?
Oh, well, a lot of different aspects of this movie can be drawn in parallel with the 60s, the late 60s, early 70s.
Mm.
And Harry's character is very, he thinks he's a lot more persuasive than he probably is. And also he sticks to his guns no matter how stupid those guns actually are.
Dumber guns than in Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
So I was just drawing a parallel that the cellar that he keeps saying we must maintain going down to the cellar. The cellar could be Vietnam and Harry could be Nixon and the daughter dying on the slab could be America.
Just the darkest timeline.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
Oh, so Helen and Harry are constantly fighting back and forth, and...
He's like, I'm right! She's like, and that's what's important to you, isn't it? That you're always right.
Mm-hmm. My favorite quote that she says is, we may not enjoy living together, but dying together doesn't solve anything. And I love that line.
I want them to be divorced so badly.
This was the trip that did it.
I was telling Lydia about the last vacation that a family takes before the big D is like... It's harsh. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, I see the threadbare on this one. And poor Karen, she probably was just like, look, mother bite me. Okay, so then Ben yells down the stairs. He goes, hey, we found a TV up here. And she's like, a TV? And so like Helen hollers up the stairs. She goes, Tom, if Judy could come sit with Karen, then maybe me and Harry could come up there. And then Tom does the greasiest thing that Tom does. Oh, he does two greasy things. The greasy one that he does right now. He does like this sleazy thing where he goes, Judy, go down and sit with Karen so we can get things worked out, because apparently Judy's useless and he already knows it. But he's like, do this. Mm-hmm. You want to say it? Do it. It's the worst thing a guy can say to a chick in a film that like.
I don't remember what he says.
He goes, do this for me.
Oh, and she's like, I don't want to do this. Like, why am I the one who's being expected to take care of a kid?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, the adults are in the room, Judy. You need to leave.
Or the men are in the room, Judy, and there's a kid who needs to be taken care of. And because of the fact that you're a woman and just naturally built for maternal things, I'm just sort of like,
look, if you just need somebody to sit next to somebody who's catatonic and stare off into the distance, I got a better candidate for you, and she's been on the couch for the last 35 minutes.
Barbara.
Just saying. So Helen comes up and she sits uncomfortably in a chair and she's looking at Judy. Nope, she's looking at Barbara. And she's looking at Barbara. Barbara like turns.
But Barbara's like feeling the lace on the sofa.
There's a doily on the armrest and she's like stroking it with her fingers. And Helen is so disturbed that she like takes out a cigarette and she's like, what?
She like lights it. And that's when Barbara just like shoots her a look like,
fire bad. And it's not until Helen puts out the match that she, like, chills the fuck out.
Right.
Like, why? Why is she scared of fire now?
Because she relates to the zombie brother that she has.
Okay, so guess what time it is?
TV time.
TV exposition time. Woo, woo. Okay, so the TV effectively communicates at this point that they no longer want you to hole up inside a place. They want you to get to an emergency center.
Right.
That they also exposit that there was a satellite that went around Venus that returned with a mysteriously high level of radiation. The science is bad. They shoot it out, they shoot it in orbit.
Right, because they're terrified of Venusian radiation. And I'm like, fucking second wave feminism. That's how I took it.
So now they're like, the men are then debating like how they're going to get the gas and the truck needs gas. That's why I pulled in. There's a pump outside, but we need the keys. How are we going to get there with all those ghouls out there?
So the TV is showing like names of different areas that they can go to. And one of them comes up as Willard. And I thought what was interesting is watching it in black and white is some of those names kind of blend in with the broadcaster shirt. But when they say Willard, you can actually see the framing of the broadcaster is actually at a different angle. Willard actually shows up, so as the audience we can see that.
Oh, cool.
And that's when Ben's like, Willard, I saw a sign for Willard.
That's about 17 miles from here.
Yeah, that's what Tim
says.
Are
you local? Yeah.
Yeah.
Me and Judy are local.
Yeah, and it was like, well, go get Judy, because Ben recognizes when someone who is effective needs to be up here.
Yeah, it's Tim. Almost like, okay, she's treated like a sexy lamp.
Mm-hmm.
But Judy might have something going for her.
Yeah.
But we'll never know.
No.
Because she was treated like a lamp.
And then she died.
Oh, sorry, spoilers. Okay, is there a fruit cellar? We need jars so we can make Molotov cocktails. And I'm like, Molotov!
Oh, I think there's some kerosene down there.
A whole jug of it. Like, that would have been, like, it's very much all a, if only I had a Holocaust cloak. Miracle Max said it fit me so nice that I could just have it.
And Ben asks Judy to go upstairs and cut parts of sheets into strips of cloth for them. Mm-hmm.
So they do a scene. So they're getting everything ready for this raid to go get the truck so they can get everybody into the truck. They're going to distract the zombies with the Molotov cocktails. They have to get all this set up first, though. And so we have this little side scene with Tim, Tom, and Judy. Mm-hmm. And it's objectively terrible. It's forced. It's the only romantic scene in the entire film. Oh, she's like, are you sure this is what we should do? Okay. For as terrible as this scene is, there is one fantastic line.
Mm-hmm.
There, he's like, we got to do this together, Judy, you and me. Like, whatever, kid, whatever. And she's like, are you sure it's the right thing to do? And then he says, the television said it was the right thing to do. I was like, I'm guilty of it. I suppose I can't, like, really fault you on that, Tom. But, like, it's not good. You're young. He's a baby. Baby.
Yeah. Well, and he's like constantly saying, you know, like, oh, just give me that smile of yours. Just give me that smile of yours.
He walks into the room and he's like, you've always got a smile for me. And then they have this big exchange where he's like, you just got to do it, because that's all you have to say to a girl in this film to get her to do a thing. And then he's all like, where's that smile for me? And I'm like, and then they have the most awkward kiss where you don't actually see their mouth on mouth.
The important thing that like kind of plays in later on is that he was like, well, you don't always like to go. Remember when we had that flood and it took us everything we had to convince you that it was important to leave the house? So Judy has a problem with leaving areas.
Yeah, she does. It's a bad time to overcome that, Judy.
Right. But she does mention that she just doesn't want Tim to go. because she cares about him.
That's true. But this is also when I realized and wrote down that she's the value brand Jane Fonda.
And Jen, that way,
Jen pointed out that she's got Kristen Stewart mouth. She's just confused and looking left and right like if two people were holding dog treats on opposite sides of the room and a golden retriever didn't know which one to go to first. That's Judy. She's like, don't go.
Yeah. They also talk about
a golden retriever with separation anxiety.
So every golden retriever ever.
Little bit. Okay.
So they're going to put the plan into effect. They also mentioned that they need to leave a door open. Ben and Tom are going to unboard the door.
They've sent Judy downstairs, except she doesn't go downstairs.
She's not all the way downstairs. She's sort of in the doorway. Harry is sent up to throw the Molotov cocktails.
Yeah, he's going
to
do it from the tops. The top floor.
Right.
But there's this pensive staring contest because Tim sent Judy downstairs and then she's at the door all of a sudden at the top of the stairs, at the top of the stairs to the cellar. And then he's at the front door and it does this staring contest back and forth where they're just pensive. He's like, what are you doing? And she's like, I'm standing here. Except it's all nonverbal. And it's like, oh, okay, you were supposed to go downstairs. I'm over here now. I'm changing my mind because I'm evolving as a character in a very bad time. I'm happy for you, but I really don't want you to evolve character-wise in this time. I've got a plan, and you're f***ing it up. I'm going to sit over here, and I'm going to, like, f*** up your plan, because, like, I'm a girl who needs to not be a lamp. I'm raging against the dying of the lamp, except that's what's going to kill you, lady. And I can't object, because I really want you to grow as a person, so.
Just the worst possible time to grow. So this is what actually happens, applauders. They pull the boards off the doors. Ben's doing this and Tom's looking over at Judy. And then they prepare to rush out. Tom's going to go to the truck because he knows more about that. And Ben's just there is like, I'm the one with the torch.
He's got the gun. So
right.
he can run point on keeping them safe as they get the gas.
Right. So as they open the door and they go running out, Judy goes running out the door as Harry comes coming. Coming down the door, and she's just standing there like a golden retriever with separation anxiety.
And Ben's like, "Well, if you're coming, come on."
Yeah, and then Harry like shuts the door and
locks him adapting again.
Harry?
Ben. He's like, "Well, if you're gonna come, then you better just get in."
Right. But I think there's also the moment where Harry like shuts the door and locks it.
Yeah. But he's got to get up and start throwing those Molotovs.
No. He has already thrown the Molotovs. It's after he throws them.
Oh, he comes back down.
That he comes back down when he's done because he's
distracted. I guess. Yeah. Sorry.
It's okay. But he like shuts the door. I distinctly heard a lock the second time around watching it.
Well, yeah. We know it gets locked because. Mm-hmm. Of in a scene.
Right. But Judy doesn't have any way of like actually going back in if she changed her mind.
She wasn't going to.
She has to go into the car.
Right.
And so they drive off to the pump, try and use the key to unlock the pump.
This is where I wrote Ben's all like, well, you get to die. Let's come along. Okay. So they get all the way to now it's a few hundred yards away. It's like a barn's distance away.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a reasonable farm distance away from the house.
Right.
And they pull up in the truck. And the key they found that's labeled gas doesn't work in the lock.
Right.
So Ben's like, how can I problem solve this? We're in imminent danger. We need this gasoline. I guess I'll, and this is the only irrational thing he does.
Yeah.
He shoots the lock.
Right. At a locked gas pump.
Yeah. That's not good.
No. But it doesn't explode in their faces, which is great. And he like goes and he sets the torch down near the car and he's like positioning himself to fire at the zombies. And what the f*** does Tom do?
Tim Tom, the Nim Nom, the I don't know if the gas, like the pump falls out or he squeezes it too soon.
He squeezes it too soon and it goes flying and it covers everything. And that's where
it hits the torch. And now there's fire everywhere.
All on the car.
And so Tim Tom's like, oh, I got to get the car away from the gas pump in case it blows.
Mm-hmm.
So Judy's still in there. He climbs in. He starts driving away. Ben's like, what are you doing? They get too far away from Ben.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, we got to get out because the truck is still on fire.
So what does Tom do after the car gets set on fire?
He drives away and he's like, we got to get out because the truck is still on fire. Like Ben tries to put out the flames, but then Tom drives away. But the truck is on fire towards the gas hole.
Mm-hmm.
Nope.
Gas pump?
No.
No?
It's the gas cap. The gas cap area is on fire.
Oh, okay, yeah.
He drives away. He's like, we got to get out of here. And so he like stops the truck too far away from Ben. He jumps out and then Judy's all like, oh, no.
Guess she can't get out of the car. Guess she can't leave.
Because her seatbelt is stuck. So he drives back in to help her. But then the truck explodes, guys. They were too dumb to get killed by zombies in the zombie film. That takes a certain level.
How often have we seen that? There's always the one person who is just too, like, dumb or incompetent to get killed by zombies.
Yeah, it's true, 100%. Like, I don't want to be a stereotypical death in a zombie film, even if this one is seminal. Like, but then what's funny to me is later on. So the blood in the film is Bosco's chocolate flavored syrup, or Bosco's chocolate syrup. And the flesh was roasted ham. So at this point, we'll cut to zombies walking around eating the bodies. Mm-hmm. And they all have barbecue. It's all roasted ham. And they're like, ar-ar-ar-ar. And I was talking to Lydia earlier and I was like, you know what? Like a specific, like if you doctored it a little bit, like chocolate sauce and ham doesn't sound bad.
Yeah.
It sounds like something an Iron Chef would do.
Agreed. Like some dark chocolate.
We've got some Black Forest ham with a dark chocolate glaze.
Salted dark chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
That checks out.
Mm-hmm. I would sign up for that.
But Ben now has no way of getting back. Oh, Ben does this before the explosion. Ben does like pull out a rug or a blanket and he starts like patting out the fire that's on the ground.
Which
because
is why
he's
sensible. He doesn't get in the truck. He doesn't get right. in the truck because it doesn't make any sense. It's on fire.
Right.
But it's also their only trick out of town. So like he's trying really hard to like make it feasible.
Mm-hmm.
But Tim.
Right.
I know that Tom is responsible for getting all that gas everywhere, but Ben really did leave that torch a little close to the truck and the gas pump.
I would say it was 10 plus feet away because, like, well.
I would say it's more like, you know, like less than 5 feet away. So Jen does make a good point that he could have moved that a little bit further.
Yes,
there's
could.
No way he would have really predicted that Tom would be so dumb to spray a whole bunch of gas on the car. And the ground.
Okay, devil's advocate. What if it only sprayed because it was damaged because the thing just got shot?
Oh, yeah. Like maybe the handle broke.
But I don't want to put anything on Ben.
No. He's been so sensible at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay, so Ben's got the gun. Does he have the torch still? Yeah, he do. You have the torch?
I'm just going to go ahead and say yes.
Okay. So he shoots a guy in the chest. We debated whether or not he was aiming for the head or not.
Right.
Because he shot a guy in the head earlier, and that was effective.
Mm-hmm.
But can you get headshots 100% of the time if you don't
right.
have like specialized scope and locking right. ability of certain video game types?
True.
Okay. We'll put that aside. He manages to get back to the front door.
Mm-hmm. Guess what? Harry's at the front door. Does he unlock it?
Harry is moving Harry's moving to the cellar door.
Right.
And Ben's like, hey, let me in. And Harry doesn't say anything. And then Ben, because sexy as hell, kicks the door in and catches Harry standing at the top of the open cellar door where he could have come and unlocked the door. And then they look at each other, and then they look at each other, and then they look at each other, but not in the way that Judy and Tim Tom looked at each other, which was sadder.
Mm-hmm.
Ben shuts the door, I think. And then he goes up to Harry.
Well, no, he goes and he grabs the door that was braced up against it, and Ben starts like hammering the door back in place, and then Harry comes up and helps him.
Okay.
And just so applauders, you know, Harry watched everything that happened at the gas pump.
Oh yeah, like, he's looking through the window. They cut to him a couple times, and he's all sweaty and like
right.
licking his lips, sort of like creepy.
He's just sort of like, oh no, what's going on? I'm watching this horror unfold. And I mean, he was there. He heard Ben like knocking at the door. He could have seen Ben running back to the house.
Oh, man.
And he still didn't like leave the door unlocked. Like it's that whole thing where you're like, oh, someone's coming in. I'm going to make sure that the door is open so they don't have to break their stride. Harry could have done that and he didn't because Harry's a dick.
Well, it's funny enough because like they barricaded themselves in the basement before without locking the front door,
mm-hmm.
which is how Barbara got in.
Right.
So, like, it's not like she was going to break into anywhere. She had no skills.
Mm-hmm.
So she found an open door and got inside.
Right.
So I don't think the fact that he locked the door was, like, intentionally screwing Ben over.
Right.
It was bad.
Right. And so when they get the door propped up, because Harry, like, I mean, what was it? His wife talks about how he always has to be right. And Harry's always just been like justifying his bad behavior. And now he actually has a moment where he can go ahead and actually help. He failed the first attempt, but there's a second attempt with Ben actually coming in. And he actually does try and help Ben, but it's like a little bit too late.
Well, and it's selfish in retrospect because he's
right.
just trying to secure the house again.
Right. And so when they stop, when the moment is kind of passed, the danger is sort of passed.
They've got the door blocked now.
Right. What does Ben do to Harry?
He punches him.
Again and again.
Close fist 3 times. Mm-hmm. Bam. Smack. Bam. Until Harry's laying on the couch with like a dribble of blood out of his nose. And mm-hmm. he looks not unlike Barbara.
Right. And
now everybody's come up the stairs, though, except for Karen.
Right. Oh, also, was this the first movie that we had a bitten zombie child that the parents are trying to protect?
Think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like a hidden. Well, they might have mentioned that she was bitten, but that matters, I don't think, comes up.
Mm-hmm.
Because Ben says it. He goes, well, we can't travel with her or something like that because, like, who's to say what kind of diseases she's got?
Right.
You know, what from the things.
Mm-hmm. And Harry says, I mean, they're making another plan to go and like,
where's your car? Like 2 miles away.
Right. Barbara's like, Johnny's got the keys to the car.
Stages of Barbara 3. We were on 8. Stages 9. Okay. So they're trying to get her to go back downstairs. And the only way they can convince her to go back downstairs, this is back when Judy was still alive, was to be like, don't you want to get out of here? And she goes, yes, I'd like to leave. So mm-hmm. that's stage 9. Mm-hmm. I like to leave, Barbara. Vapid talker.
Yeah.
Which is, well, you're not going to be able to start the car. Johnny has the keys. Mm-hmm. And then almost helps. And then dead. And that's the end of the stages of Barbara.
Right.
9, 10, 11, 12, 13 stages of Barbara.
So it's like at one point they talk about a news broadcast being at 3. And that's like kind of getting Barbara talking a little bit more. Oh, yes. Well, we should be able to leave by then. That's only 10 minutes away. And we should be gone by then.
Mm-hmm.
And then they turn on the TV. There's another news broadcast. This specifically about a militia of people who are going and killing ghouls.
That's TV exposition number 3.
Right. And they have
and we see the naked zombie again.
Yeah. And so is it like before this moment where we actually see them pulling like the barbecued flesh out of the car and like, you know.
Yeah, I would assume that naked zombie time is also barbecued ham time.
There we go.
And then the TV is talking. They're cutting from the newsroom to a feed of what we will assume is earlier in the day because we are completely in darkness.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a daytime thing. They've gotten like 3 of them, 13 of them so far. And we're talking to Chief McCullen, who's got a hat with like 3 cigars sticking out of it. He's got a bandolier.
Yeah, it's like he's got a strap of bullets straped across his chest.
Yes.
A la Chewie from Star Wars.
Yeah, except Chewie's like a amiable character.
Right.
This guy, like, you're just like, oh, he's a good old boy. Ugh.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah.
All of my orations this entire episode are just like the worst. I'm sorry.
They're great.
What does he advise them to do? Bait and burn them. They go up real good.
Yeah, like shoot them in the head. Got to shoot them in the head. And if you're in close proximity and you don't have a gun, get a bludgeoning weapon and aim for the head.
Yeah, and then they ask him, I forget what was the leading question, but then he says like one of the most epic lines of the entire film.
Go for it.
He says, what can you tell us about these creatures? So this is probably the lead up question. He goes, well, they're dead, so they're all messed up.
We're approaching the end of our review of 1968's Night of the Living Dead, a plotter. But we still have one more part to conclude our walkthrough and let you know our shocked and applaudable moments. Are you in need of some survival plans between now and next Tuesday's release? Talk and Shiz recently released their discussion on the films of Tim Burton. And For Your Reference has a great discussion on the art house classic Amelie. We'll have links to these shows on our Twitter feed using the handle @ShockedApplaud as a comment under our pinned tweet for this week's episode. Hey, this is your audio engineer and stay-at-home survivalist, Jen. Did you know that reviewing us on Apple Podcasts is a great way to help us reach our audience goals each month? Just search for Shocked and Applaud if you haven't yet subscribed, scroll to the bottom of our episodes, and you'll see options to rate us or write a review. We'd love to know if you're having as great a time listening as we do discussing strange cinema. We'll be back in 1 week with part 3 of our review. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for Patroning the Peculiar,